Hello and welcome once again to Crazy Comics and Stories. It's me, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rat Bastard. And at the other end of the series of tubes and wires we call the internets is Joe Crazy Writer. How you doing today, Joe?
Fuck.
And that is in reference to what?
The word you wanted to know about in the last page of the Matrix comic I sold a couple podcasts ago, what the dirty word was.
Oh!
It wasn't necessarily all there. There was a little sign that said UCK, but you know what it meant.
So for an R-rated movie.
Yes.
Where they can say the Effenheimer as many times as they want.
Yep.
They pulled the comic.
Exactly.
You know, you can even say that word in a PG-13 movie once.
And at least on this here podcast, too.
We've had the explicit tag I've given.
So I got this because I ended up getting a bonus because I bought this weird, it's called Sleepy's, the mattress professional, and Sleepy's busy flying around the Hulk and Nightmare and Iron Man. Well, 100% of the proceeds go to supporting the American Cancer Society. So apparently you could, for $3, you could donate this at Sleepy's, the mattress professionals, and get this here comic. And then I got a copy of the Matrix comic, so now I still have one, even though I did sell one a while back. There, another question, once asked, now answered.
And Jen Wicked's on the show. How are you doing today, Jen?
All right, not bad. Not so angry tonight.
Well, thank God for that.
Hate to disappoint you.
I'm not disappointed. I'm glad I don't have to, hide in the corner.
Everyone listening to me is probably disappointed.
Yeah, they're disappointed whenever you're sober.
I had this delicious pizza of Italian fries waiting to share with you, but...
Sure you did.
You're right, I didn't. I could certainly use some, though.
We have letters, ladies and gentlemen.
I could understand why you'd be upset. You hear you're thinking like fries, like French fries, and out comes this pizza.
Oh, for the love of God, let it go.
I'm just trying to say I agree with her. Jeez.
Let it go, please.
How often do I agree with Jen, huh?
Every time you two gang up on me.
That's a piece of
That's cake. What we're here for.
Exactly.
So, Michael Carter emailed us in episode 205 when you and Joe were going through the September 2015 previews. Oh, Joe, do you remember episode 205?
I remember to look up the word fuck in the Matrix comic. So
this is the level of nerd I'm uncomfortable with.
Yeah.
It was a simpler time. There were five. Michael Carter.
What podcast
was
it?
Hi, Michael. How you doing?
Hey, Mike.
It was episode 205. He said, you came across a book being written by Max Landis. You then wondered why they didn't mention he wrote the Zombie Survival Guide and World War Z. That's because Max Brooks wrote these, not Max Landis. You got the wrong director's kid. I then looked up Max Landis. He is the son of John Landis, who hasn't had a good movie since Groundhog Day, but still,
snap.
He wrote the upcoming movie. No, the movie that came out called American Ultra that I remember seeing ads for. When he started writing at 16, Landis had written 75 screenplays. He wrote his first script at the age of 18, a collaboration with his father, which was probably the most exciting movie news his father had gotten since Blues Brothers 2000. But Joe, we screwed up.
What did you do?
That's why we need to go through all these old podcasts to get these here corrections. Thank you, Mike.
Right on. That.
Thank you. If you sent Corey your address, I will send you a bonus piece from my vast accumulation of crap as a thank you for keeping us on the straight and narrow.
He did not send us his address, but he still might.
Yeah, well, if he does, just Corey will send it to me. Or if you don't trust Strode, and I don't blame you, not many people do, you can just send it to me direct at crazycomics@gmail.com.
We also got on our fan page, the Crazy Comics and Stuff, because Joe forgot the name of the show when he created the page.
I just Phil Buck, like stuff. You're not a stuff man, but boy, I love stuff.
Phil Buck, who we reviewed, well, Jin reviewed the webpage of his comic.
Yeah, he friended me on Facebook this morning and sent me a nice message.
Oh.
Thanks for the critique on those Shadow People webcomic from Jin Wicked. We're going to shift the webcomic over to Taptastic for easier navigations. Hopefully more people will enjoy it that way, I think is what he meant to say. So, Jin, what the flame and blue hell is Taptastic?
I have no idea what a Taptastic is, but good luck to you, sir.
And when you do it, let us know and we'll go take another look.
Yeah, when you do that, let me know. And if anybody else wants your stuff raked over the coals, just feel free to send it to Corey Attention Jin.
Yeah, because we figured out something interesting after we went off the air, because you've got Corey, who's a writer, and you've got Jin, who is artist supreme, and me, who's just a all-around reader. So you're getting,
and a former retailer.
And you're getting
don't forget that.
You're getting like a review from three different perspectives. God help you if all three of us actually like your product. You're going to be a $1 million winner. You know what I'm saying?
Well, and one other thing I want to mention, we will soon be getting reviews from some of the bigger publishers.
Oh, is Crazy Press back in business?
Oh, I wish.
See Crazy Comics number 7?
Well, we could always bootleg it.
Yeah, there is that.
I do have Crazy Comics 1-6. One of these days I should probably scan them and put them up on a webpage.
On my to-do list.
Oh, if you've got something you want reviewed, send it to us, because I thought the review episode, other than me getting screamed at for 20 minutes, was a great episode, and we're going to institute a weekly review segment.
We are?
Yes, a new segment, Joe.
Well, it's not like we use any of the old ones anymore.
Yeah, we do. We do Freaking and Geeking.
Yeah, we don't do any obscure characters. We don't have any Hanging in the Home stories.
We had a Hanging in the Home story.
Kind of, well, there's a few. Actually, there were a few with the MCBA episodes.
That's right.
So we got a lot there.
It's just we don't use them every time. But I do think that, like Freaking and Geeking, the reviews will be nice, because we could tell people... First, we could tell people whether to buy, borrow, or ignore. And second, we get free stuff. And for a bonus, just like our pal Phil Buck, we don't go out of our way to say, all right, how can we rip this to shreds and be funny? We actually, when I review, I don't know about you guys, I really want to enjoy what I'm going to review.
I hate everything.
Well, you hate comics.
I know, I hate everything.
Oh, everything now?
No, I'm
it
liking.
Has expanded.
I'm liking milk and cheese.
She likes hating.
I like hating.
Yes.
Good. I think I just found my geeking.
So there you go, kids. If you've got something to review, especially if you got a website, you want a web designer to look at and say, "Hey, here's why nobody's looking at your web strip."
If it's a comic strip. I'm not
right.
Websites in general.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, the web strips.
So we get a call from Walmart. Jin is not interested in looking at
it. I am not here. If you have a web comic, I will be happy to offer my unqualified opinion.
You know, Corey, we've done a lot of plugs. Are there any other plugs we need to do?
Not that I can think of, other than
I thought we had a sponsor
later in the show. Well,
let's just do it now, because we're plugging things. Let's plug
everything.
I want
my own segment.
Really, it needs to be. Well, okay, let me plug the MCBA Comic Con 2016, May 14th and 15th.
I don't know if I can get that weekend off.
I've already got it off. www.mcbacomiccons, and of course, as we get closer to January 1st, they'll have advanced tickets on sale, and I imagine the boys will be awake from Fall Comic Con and start slipping us some here information.
We have a new sponsor, so as you listen to our sponsors, we have a new sponsor!
Woohoo!
And here they are. You may not be able to join the mighty Marvel Marching Society anymore, or even the Friends of Old Marvel. but you can visit our sponsors. Our oldest sponsor is DreamHost.com. DreamHost.com is the best, bar none, web host in the whole known universe. If you need a website, go to DreamHost.com. They will take care of you as they've been taking care of me for over 15 years. If you use the code CRAZY, that's K-R-A-Y-Z, you get $20 off your first year of hosting. If you are listening to this podcast, you are very good looking. That's right. As a good looking person, you can't trust your skin to any old razor. That's why you need to shave with the amazing razors you could get delivered from the Dollar Shave Club. Every month they send a box with your shaving supplies. At the beginning of the week, or whenever you want, you pop in a fresh blade and get that fresh blade shave. It feels fantastic, and it's just one of the many, many ways that you can maintain the good looks that everyone has come to expect from you. And if you join us at the Dollar Shave Club, their plans start at just $3 a month. They have a money-back guarantee, and there is no excuse for you to ever use any other razor. So just go to dollarshaveclub.com/crazy, K-R-A-Y-Z, to get started. One of the things you need to do this year, you need to get healthy. We all need to be healthy so we can all hang out a lot longer. And one of the ways to get healthy is not to go down to the vending machine and buy those chips or those candy bars or any of the other vending machine snacks. You want healthy snacks picked out by actual chefs who know what they're doing, and you can do that at graze.com. And if you use the code CORYS3R5P, your first and fifth box are free, so you can try it out. See if that's the kind of stuff you like. That's CORYS3R5P. Our final sponsor is Worldwide News. Worldwide News is the story of the lowest rated cable news network and the people who work there. It is updated twice a week by writer Corey Strode. Hey, that's me! And artist Dangerous Dan Moore. Worldwide News at worldwidenews.solitairerose.com, part of the Solitaire Rose family of websites. If you would like to contact us, there are a whole bunch of ways. You can email us at corey.strode@gmail.com. You can give us a call. We have a voice line that is open at all times at 952-856-0519, or you could go to Facebook and join the Crazy Comics and Stuff fan page. If you would like to advertise on Crazy Comics and Stories or on Solitaire Rose Radio, you can. Just send me an email at corey.strode@gmail.com. Subject advertising. Thanks. Pretty cool, huh?
I like that.
We're getting all sorts of sponsors. We may have another new sponsor in a week or so.
Well, that's the beauty of podcasting, because you can record it, ignore it, and then go back and replay it if you want.
You can hit that rewind button on your MP3 player. You can hit it in the Stitcher and in the iTunes and the Pocket Cast and the YouTubes and I don't know where and whatever that weird thing in Germany is that loves us so much.
You really gotta let that one go. That's getting old.
Yeah, they've downloaded the damn episode.
Even Oprah wouldn't jump on that one.
Oh my goodness.
I don't know what it is. It just weirds me out. It weirds me out. So, let's see. One of the things that I wanted to talk about is, Jen said she wanted a segment. I gave Jen a big old bag of books about a week ago, 2 weeks ago. I don't know. When did I see you last? 10 years ago? 19 years ago?
I can't remember.
It was so long ago that, thankfully you don't remember what my face looks like, which is good for me. But I tried to pick books that would be good for someone who had not read comics before.
Yep.
And one of the things I was thinking about is Joe and I, way back, again, way back in an old episode, we talked about comics, gateway comics, comics for new people. And I did some research into it, and I'm looking at those books now, and those books are not really doing very well on the sales chart, Joe.
Well, I would... First of all, explain gateway comics.
All right. A gateway comic is somebody walks into a comic shop, or anymore, they go on to the interwebs and go, I've been hearing about these funny books, these comical books, these things with words and pictures, and I hear they're not just for kids anymore. What would be a good comic? What would be a good first comic for somebody to read?
And see, I would disagree with the notion gateway comic, because I don't believe they exist. I don't think there's one magical comic that somebody's going to read that's going to get them to start buying comics. I mean, I've tried. I mean, I put my head around it, and as a retailer, I've thought about it. I think you either are prone to want to read that type of media, or you're not. You know, I mean, I talk to like my wife. She watches Buffy, Supernatural, X-Files. All these have comic adaptations. All of them have extra seasons. You know, Buffy season 8, X-Files season 10. She just doesn't care. I know a guy who, he doesn't buy comics. He just gets them from the library. He just reads whatever is available. He doesn't necessarily care if they're sequential or in order. He just knows he can get a graphic novel and do it that way. You know, my daughter Dana, she just buys them when she can. Mostly when she's with me and, you know, I buy.
And you've got money.
Yeah, when I buy. You know, we had an interview with the first MCBA where I was talking with a couple people who were there at the Comic-Con, and they said they saw all the Marvel movies, but they just don't read comics. And I'm gonna throw this over to you, Jen, and I'm not asking this as a mean question, because I know when I say it, it's going to sound mean, but why don't you read comics?
That's a good question, really, because, you know, I got really into Poison Elves for a while. And I guess maybe part of it is just, I mean, I'm not really into fiction in general, so I don't read a lot of novels or anything really. Like, I read nonfiction books occasionally if there's something I want to learn about, but I'm just not really, like, I like comics that make me laugh, and there's just, sometimes I laugh at really stupid stuff, but it's kind of hard to make me laugh. But I've never been into, like, the drama stuff, so many of the comics seem more like soap operas or superhero soap operas.
Yeah.
So I'm not really interested in the stories. So, you know, like, he gave me all these comics, and I picked up Milk and Cheese because it's really, I would love the art so far, and I tweeted at Evan Dorkin, and he replied. Which was awesome, but you know, like, I don't know, I... There's just something has to be really unique to stand out to me. And when you go in a comic shop, you're kind of overwhelmed by a lot of art that looks really samey, a lot of books that look really samey. And if you're not into, you know, the guys in spandex pants with their underpants on the outside, you know, then, you know, there's not really like, well, it's just not my thing. I'm not judging anybody that's into it.
No, because, I mean, that's the same thing. It's like, well, why doesn't somebody like sports? Why doesn't somebody read books? Why doesn't somebody watch this TV show over that TV show?
Well, you made a good
personal
point about
invitational
the...
choice.
Yeah, you made a good point about the TV shows, because, you know, I do watch like the X-Files and all of that, and I'm looking at watching The Walking Dead, and even so, I know that Walking Dead, that, you know, like, Matt collected the big hardcover trade paperbacks, and they're sitting on the bookshelf. I just had no desire to read them. On the other hand, I do read quite a few web comics, and for me, like, I need a little bit of a personal connection, and I know that's not something that's afforded to everybody, but, you know, like, a lot of my friends are artists and creators, and so, you know, I really appreciate their work because I also know the person creating it. So that can get me into something I wouldn't ordinarily be interested in.
One of the things I always hear about Gateway Comics, though, bringing it back to that, was when you talk to people who are collectors, one of the things I like to do is, well, what's the book that got you interested? And I actually put together a list of some of the comics that people have said who I know. And the one for people who are in their 30s and 40s, G.I. Joe. I can't tell you how many people who are still comic collectors who said the first comic they got was G.I. Joe. They love G.I. Joe. That's kind of where they started.
But is that a comic that led them to other things?
Yes.
See, because they would go
to the shop to buy G.I. Joe, and they liked it so much that they would buy other stuff.
Yeah, I'll bring up an example that I know. We've talked about bronies. You know, guys who really dig the My Little Pony stuff. And I'm actually getting, I don't know why I should be shocked, but I'm always surprised when I find a guy like, oh, yeah, I'm into that. And I ask them, well, do you buy the comics? And they don't. They know of them because My Little Pony number one, what was the number on that?
Oh, it was, I think it finally sold over 200,000 by the time it was all said and done.
It was phenomenal.
And I think there's a difference, though, because you're talking to people who are into a specific fandom.
Well, yeah, and that's the thing, though.
And I'm talking to comic fans and saying, what was the book that got you hooked?
But yeah, that's the thing, though. If they came in because G.I. Joe, they obviously dug G.I. Joe. They must have had either from the cartoon or the toy. I don't know if everybody, just because they're here for G.I. Joe, would necessarily, well, I think I'll try X-Men or I'll try Spider-Man or, you know. I mean, I had people at the shop. They just bought manga. That's all they bought. They weren't interested in anything else. And manga at the time, Dark Horse, I think Viz.
Tokyo
I don't
Pop.
Know if Tokyo Pop was around. But they came out in comic book format. And then it started to switch as I got out of, or when I, after I sold Hot Comics into the $9.95 format. And then, of course, it exploded. I mean, good Lord, it was at Best Buy for a while. And then it imploded to where it is now. You almost have to find a shop like The Source that would be dedicated enough to carry all that stuff for you.
They still have them in bookstores. It's not as big as it was because the American comics have kind of squeezed them out. But even last week, I got two emails from people saying, oh, here's this new manga you should try. One of the books that I wanted to highlight is a book that people who don't read comics buy, and then when you talk to them, oh, are you a comic fan? Yeah, what was the first book you buy? They talk about One Piece. They started
that
reading One Piece when they were a kid.
All right, explain to someone who's never heard of One Piece. I've been buying since the original Star Wars. I have never heard of One Piece.
One Piece is the story of a group of pirates, many of whom have superpowers. And they are traveling the world to find the greatest treasure ever, because the greatest pirate ever had all of his treasure, and he had it in one piece. So it's pretty much a superhero adventure, except it's set in a fantasy world with pirates.
Is it manga or otherwise?
It's manga.
Yes, it's manga.
Okay.
And anime.
The artist has a really unique style, and I don't like it. People tend to either love it or hate it. There's not a lot of middle ground.
Hmm.
But it's another, to me, it reminds me a lot of G.I. Joe in that I started reading it as a kid because I saw the cartoon, and then they moved from that to other manga or other comics. Another comic that a lot of people who are newer readers have mentioned to me is Hawkeye. That they read Hawkeye and loved it so much that they started moving out from there. Which, if you look at a lot of the Marvel midline books and some of the DC, the Batgirl movement that started, they look like Hawkeye. They have the same feel of Hawkeye of, yeah, it's a superhero book, but really it's about him on his day off and kind of dealing with normal stuff and not being a perfect character. Walking Dead, Joe and I have talked innumerable times at his small shop. There was a tattoo parlor right next to us. And people from that tattoo parlor would come over to buy every book of The Walking Dead we have after the guy who, you know, put their tattoo on probably spent a half hour talking about how much he loved it. And that was, what, 2005 and 2006, mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah, they were at about issue, what was the first one? I think 20 or 25 was the first one you started telling me, you know what, just buy five for the shelf. If it doesn't sell, I'll buy them.
It was whenever you had the shop because when it started, I told Christy with issue one, whatever you're planning to order double and pull me one. And she did not pull me one, and she sold out of them in the first day.
Oh.
So that's when I went, I guess I just don't buy the first six issues and I'll buy the first trade paperback.
$1,000 mistake.
Oh, more than that, because issues two, three, four, five, and six, I didn't buy.
Yeah.
And they're all going for scary money now.
Yeah. Who knew?
One of the books that surprised me when I think back on it, that I cannot tell you how many people it was the first comic they read, and they even will still to this day, I run into people who, when they find out I like comics, they go, man, the first comic I ever read was Watchmen. That was amazing. And I have heard that since the movie has now, you know, been in theaters, been on DVD, is now on FX probably every week or so, the trade paperback sales are finally falling off. Which means if it goes out of print, Alan Moore gets it back.
Woohoo!
But another one, and Jen has talked about it, is Saga. Saga seems to be attracting people who don't read comics.
It has really good pacing. It doesn't feel like, I've complained about this when we've reviewed comics before, but it doesn't feel rushed. It doesn't feel like you're kind of being whipped from one thing to the next. So I think there's something about the quality of the writing that it feels more like what I would call a graphic novel. It feels more like a novel with pictures than what I think of as a comic book.
I think the other thing, and especially when we talk about all of these different books, is it's very different thematically from anything else on the stands. There's nothing like Saga on the stands. You can't really classify it. It's kind of fantasy. It's kind of science fiction. It's kind of romance. It's kind of action. It fits in all of those, but it doesn't stay in that genre. It hits them all. Walking Dead. I've talked a lot about how, yes, it's a horror book, but you will go now for months without a zombie showing up. And it's interpersonal drama. It's almost political in a sense. Hawkeye, which I'll talk about a lot more when we get to geeking, experimented with how the pages looked. The art was very different. And like I said, it's not a superhero book. The villains in the book are a bunch of tracksuit-wearing Russian mobsters who call each other bro constantly. One Piece, superheroes, but they're pirates in a fantasy world. Another book that I want to bring up, and Joe and I could talk about a lot more, and Jen will probably leave the room because she does want to throw stuff. The new Star Wars book.
Hi.
Its sales should have dropped by now, and they're not. Its sales are actually starting to go up again. And again, I'm reading people who, oh, this new Star Wars book at Marvel is what got me into buying comics. Or, this is the big one, I had dropped out of comics after this or after that or after this. I heard about the Star Wars comic. I picked it up. I liked it. Now I'm buying comics again.
See, there's two pieces of the puzzle that are still missing. Okay, I read Saga. How do you get me to read anything else?
For me, if I were working in a shop, oh, you like that? Brian K. Vaughan has done a lot of stuff. Here's a book he did about a plague that kills all the men on Earth but one. Here's a book about there's one superhero on Earth, and he's the mayor of New York. And then I'll show them the kicker at the end of issue one. Or Runaways. Or his other stuff at Image, like We Stand on Guard. Fiona Staples has done Archie, so if someone's really into the art on it, you kind of move them toward Archie. But Saga, because it's such a creator-driven, creator-owned thing, you would probably say, here's some other creator-owned stuff that's really different. Here's stuff to look at. For One Piece, people seem to gravitate towards stuff from that, usually manga, and then they it depends, because most people, it's from Shonen Jump, which is aimed at boys aged 12 to 16. So when they're getting to age 16, they usually kind of grow out of it, or they keep reading it and they're looking for other stuff. The Star Wars books, I don't know, man, there's so much Star Wars, you could just keep feeding them Star Wars all day. Watchmen, Alan Moore. You show him a lot of Alan Moore. Joe, you were a G.I. Joe guy. I never understood the appeal of G.I. Joe. When people would come into the shop to buy G.I. Joe, did they go to any other books?
I don't think they did. See, I think of the guys who used to shop at my store, and you had the guys who bought Image. Just didn't matter what it was. They were into the hyper Image style. Most of those guys disappeared.
Yeah.
You had the people who came in because of Superman. And, I mean, one time we had 300 people for Superman. By the time the series ended, I think all but maybe 80 disappeared. You know, there were guys still at that time, all Marvel, all whatever. You know, all Valiant. I want all Valiant. But, you know, there were very few people that came in just wandering through. I mean, I always wanted to have a shop at a mall, you know, either a kiosk or just, you know, one of the holiday malls that pop up and disappear, and load up all the merchandise with licensing product and things that people will recognize. Now, remember, this is long before the X-Men movie, long before Spider-Man, Avengers. Right now, everybody pretty much knows who everybody is. So if I put up an Avenger book, there is a possibility somebody's just going to buy it because it says Avenger. But, you know, back when we did it, Kiss, Revolutionary Comics because of the rock and roll, Barbie comic was going strong, aforementioned G.I. Joe. You could do X-Men Adventures, but, boy, if you had somebody come in from the cartoon and wanting to buy an X-Men comic, oh, you wanted to steer them away from anything Marvel was publishing because it just was not going to be pretty. You know, and that's why I guess I'm not convinced of the idea of gateway comics.
Okay, I'm going to convince you. I'll convince you.
Is Star Wars talk over?
Oh, yeah, long ago.
Long ago.
I'm going to convince you, Joe. How many people came in the 90s for Sandman, and you were able to steer them toward other Vertigo books? I can't tell you how many times somebody came in, you know, I really like the Sandman. What else is there? And there'd be the other Neil Gaiman stuff, but you would be sticking Preacher, that first trade in their hand. God, what was the other Vertigo book that was really, really big?
Well, 100 Bullets was out.
Yeah.
Transmetropolitan.
Transmetropolitan, that was the one. That was the one I remember people would read the first trade, and then within a week or two they'd come in and go, I want all seven trades, and I want them right now.
Oh, yeah.
Because they got hooked on the lead character. But Vertigo, during the 90s, up until I would say about when Fable started, Vertigo had a huge huge core of people who would come in and buy whatever Vertigo did. So if they read Sandman, they'd move over and read Why the Last Man and 100 Bullets and The Invisibles and Shade the Changing Man and Lucifer and on and on and on. And I honestly think when Axel Alonso got poached by Marvel, that was the death knell for Vertigo. And now the books that people really like from Vertigo, they're going on 10, 15 years old. They're long in the tooth. Everybody who's bought Sandman is probably, everybody who's going to buy Sandman has probably already bought Sandman. I think the Preacher TV series, if it's good, could cause an explosion in those trades.
Yeah, that should be interesting. Sometimes I think it's nice that we're getting a lot of extra publicity. I know we just finished up, we're past Halloween, and they've leaked the free comic book day over into Halloween Comic Fest. So you could go to your comic store, and if they were participating, have a bunch of free horror-based comics. I picked up The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, just because I have no idea where my number one is. And I'll talk about it later on, because we visited Hot Comics, but they had a whole table full of stuff, as well as leftovers from free comic book day. One thing I'm curious, though, will it matter? You know, I got Sabrina now. Will that particular comic be published 5 years from now? Does anything from
free... They have the next issue out in 5 years.
Does anything from free comic book day matter? Marvel, DC tend to funnel it into their next, you know, summer, winter event it'd be interesting to see. And I've got all my free comic book days, so maybe I'll wade through them occasionally. You know, a lot of it'll be, oh yeah, yeah, this is still going. I remember Radical Comics had Hercules, and it was sold pretty well, and then became a really bad Dwayne Johnson movie. But now, does anybody
care? Well,
that's
what Radical Comics was, though. Radical Comics, we found out after their first couple of miniseries, was, oh, this is where basically they're paying an artist and a writer to take this movie idea or this movie script and turn it into a comic so they could go into a studio executive's office and go, here, read this. It's a movie we want to do.
You did talk about Preacher. I think that would be interesting to see how that would work. But I also think reading along, like with Entertainment Weekly or if there's any other publications like that, every so often they'll highlight a comic or a series. You know, sometimes it's in their top 50 things to do. Sometimes it's back in the book section. If I was a retailer now, I would actually keep an eye on that. And when I see that being highlighted, I would make a little kiosk display of that. So, hey, you, as seen in Entertainment Weekly or as covered in, I don't know, local paper or whatever.
The Star Tribune every week has a column about comics.
Yeah.
Which shows me two things. One, comics are either something people are interested in, or nobody's reading the paper and they're just pretty much, okay, what can we put in there that might grab somebody?
If you didn't have a Supergirl display now, really,
you're an idiot.
You're money in the bank. You're losing it here.
I saw the ratings on Supergirl. Now, there are two things about this. First, it's on right after the number one show on TV.
Temporarily.
Right, but still.
Actually, by the time we talk, that show will be back on Thursday because they got rid of the Thursday night football.
But still, it's, oh, wow, this new show did really well after the number one show. And the second was, as I did not watch it myself because I don't have time to watch everything that's on my DVR. I was really surprised at the number of people who aren't comic book people and say that they aren't into comics who liked the show because the lead character, it was about a woman. And I think in the first episode, during the big battle sequence, there was not a man involved at all. Joe, I can't even think of a superhero movie where that's the case. Which is a weird,
well,
sad.
The other thing too is she's real happy about being a superhero.
Yeah.
I mean, she wanted to be one and she was told no and now she is. And you know, they kind of skirt around the whole, yes, Superman's around, but he isn't. So.
But with Jen here, I wanted to ask her about kind of, a lot of our listeners are comic book listeners. Where would be a good place if you wanted to learn about webcomics, if you wanted to start to read webcomics? Because the ones I used to think, oh, these are good comics to start with, have now completely turned to shit. I'm looking at you, Sinfest. What would be some good webcomics for someone who doesn't know jack or shit about webcomics?
I can tell you one that's really popular. It's Gunner Krieg Court by Tom Siddle. The address is going to be gunnerkrigg.com. That's GUNNERKRIGG.com. I've heard this comic kind of poked fun at. You could kind of some people call it like Harry Potter, but with girls. It's about a girl named Annie who has like magical abilities, and she goes to a special school. It's kind of a boarding school for that. But it's really, that's kind of where the similarities with Harry Potter ends. The art's kind of weird at the beginning, but the artist has really come a long way. It's kind of a fantasy-based comic. The characters are well-written. The art is great. There's some humor. There's some drama. And it's a really popular webcomic. I know Tom, I don't know him personally, but I know Tom usually pulls a good crowd whenever he's at a convention. So if you're into that, that's one worth checking out. I would also look at one of my favorite artists right now is a guy named Evan Dom. The current comic he's working on is called Vatu, and he also does kind of fantasy-based comics. He has a complete comic called Rice Boy, another one that's completed called Order of Tales. He's done some short stories. Vatu is ongoing right now. He inks with a brush in a traditional way, and then I think the colors are digital. But his work is just fantastic, and you can find it at riceboy.com. That's rice-boy.com. Those are probably my favorite two that I'm reading right now. My friend Randy Milholland does a comic called Something Positive. His comic's been running a long time. He has a pretty large audience. It is a little more, it's more humor-based. It's very cynical. His website's somethingpositive.net. And he's been one of my oldest friends, making comics, but his stuff is pretty popular. So that's probably one that would be accessible to anybody if you want to check that out.
When I think webcomics now, because I am such a comic book based person, I am blown away by the level of quality at Mark Waid's Thrillbent, and that's thrillbent.com. There are a number of great books here, the ones that I would recommend. First, Aw Yeah Comics. Aw Yeah Comics are by the people who did Tiny Titans and some other stuff, and it started as kind of an in-house comic for Aw Yeah Comics, a shop in Chicago. It's good for kids, but it's also, you could read it as an adult and enjoy it. Joe and I both probably are big fans of Empire, which is a comic about a world in which the supervillain won and is now ruling the world. There's also Everstar, which is a young adult comic. I like it, but I can see why people over the age of 20 might think it's a little too twee. They are reprinting The Strangers in Paradise, which was a comic that a lot of people liked, and that's a book that turned me off very early on with some terrible plotting, which I hear they kind of wrote their way out of, but still, the plotting made me bang my head against the wall and quit reading it, and Joe was even there when it happened.
Never did fix the wall.
No, you didn't. You just covered it up with stuff.
You should have fixed it. You put your head in it.
Yeah, what you gonna do? And what was the other one here? I'm looking. Oh, yeah, The Damnation of Charlie Wormwood, which is a horror comic. One of the things I like about Thrillbent is they use the internet-based, they use the way the internet works in order to kind of give you motion, because you'll click a page and a couple things will move, kind of like DC does on Batman 66 and some of their other web-based comics, and Marvel does in their Infinite comics. But for me, I very much like the fact that a lot of the stuff they do has a beginning, middle, and end, which I know for a web comic is almost death, because when you get to the end, it's, oh, okay, well, it's over. Nobody goes to see it anymore. And there's so much out there that it's hard to go, oh, I want to read this web comic that ended 4 years ago.
It's also difficult getting people to move on to a new project.
Yes.
Even if your project is fairly established, I know, you know, both myself and my friends, you know, we go off to do something else on the side, and, you know, I'm still dragging around a lot of my older work like a ball and chain, you know, around my ankle. I feel like the work I do now is so much better, but it's really that old stuff that I've been selling in mini comics, and that's the old stuff that everybody likes, and, you know, you kind of just have to go with it, but it's hard to get, even for an established webcomics creator, it's hard to get people to come along to your new project. You usually lose a pretty good chunk whenever that happens.
Another thing I want to talk with Jin about with Thrillbent is a lot of these webcomics collectives, to my mind, never seem to work. And maybe you know more than I do, because in my mind, whenever I hear about, oh, we're a whole bunch of us and we're putting together a website that will have a bunch of different comics, I don't remember them ever working. Thrillbent, because Mark Waid is very driven with it and he's bringing in kind of known creators, seems to have bucked that trend. Is there any positive for, hey, we're, you know, this collective of creators and we're going to have a site where my strip will go for a while and then this strip will go for a while and on and on and on?
I think you may be misunderstanding, like, the purpose of some webcomic collectives. They do, you know, kind of cross-promote each other's work. But I think it's as much for the creators as it is for the readers and trying to expand your readership. Because I know typically in webcomic collectives, they will kind of depend on each other to split table costs at events, different promotional avenues, merchandising. I mean, it's meant to be a group to support the artists supporting each other as much as it is a promotional tool. So I've never been a member of a collective. I've always done my own thing. I can't speak a whole lot to that. But I know that they're still around. My friend Josh is part of one. They seem to do fairly well. They're called Hiveworks. So, you know, I mean, obviously they're working for them or they wouldn't put the effort into doing it. But I think maybe you misunderstand the purpose of it a little bit, because I don't know that they do that expecting, you know, any huge increase in readership. It's more to like say, I'm not just on my own. I'm part of a group and I have these other artists that I work with that I can kind of depend on to have my back. And it's not just quite being just lost an island in the ocean by yourself.
Okay. And again, like I said, I come to it from a different world. You came, your webcomics moving to print, and I'm print moving to webcomics. And I think part of the thing that Thrillbent works for me is I'm used to, oh, this is Marvel. Marvel puts out these books. This is DC. DC puts out these books. This is Dark Horse. They put out these books. And maybe Thrillbent, because Mark Waid comes from that print world, works better for those of us who come to the web through that. Actually, got to be honest, when I first heard about Thrillbent, I did not think it would last. I thought it would be, oh, this is another, you know, the older guy is trying a new format and he'll give up on it after a little while. But he's been at it for 3-4 years. So kudos for him. Sort of last question I'm going to go around the room with. Somebody came up to you and said, what comic do you think I would like? What's the first thing that pops into your head, Joe?
Well, tell me what TV shows you like.
Bingo. That was always my answer when someone came in the shop. What movies do you like? What TV shows do you like? What this do you like? What that do you like? Jen, do people come up to you and say, what comic should I read?
Nobody has ever asked me that question.
And you probably said, mine.
I would say mine. I would say my friends. That's probably about it. I don't like recommending stuff to other people in general, which I say after having just recommended 3 very good webcomics. No, nobody's ever asked me that. You know, I'm at an event. I'm peddling my own stuff. Nobody comes up to me and says, hey, what should I buy from the guy down the row? I mean, thankfully they've at least had the tact to not do that. So, you know.
Well, one of the things that in some indie books that I really like is when they say, hey, if you like this book, here's other stuff you'd like. In Bendis's book, Powers, which you just come out on a schedule so that you could follow it, he would actually have a letters page that was 7-8 pages long. And the last page would be, here's how I'm wasting my time. And I know with webcomics, they're usually, here are other webcomics, blog rolling type stuff. I think one of the things that comics needs to do is more cross promotion of each other. And I don't mean by, hey, we're crossing over 25 books into this one big story. But when the artist or the writer goes, I really like this and I think you'd like it too.
I actually like it. In webcomics, it's very common for people to solicit guest comics from other artists. So I like seeing the occasional comics where there's another artist playing with, you know, your characters. I haven't posted those in my archive because I've been kind of persnickety about it. But I've done a couple for other people. And that's always fun because it's kind of interesting as a reader to get to see, you know, the established characters or whatever kind of portrayed by a different artist or a different writer or both, you know, just kind of seeing what other people do with the characters. And then they see the art and say, hey, I'm going to check out this other guy's work or whatever.
Yep. I agree. Comics would do that. You know, a lot of creator owned books would do that, especially in the 80s. And even now, one of the things that you don't get to see because you read Saga in trades is in the regular comic, they'll have like, oh, here's a 4-page preview of some other story.
It's kind of the print version of the same thing, yeah.
Yeah. And Walking Dead, because it's the best-selling indie comic, Robert Kirkman, who beats the drum for indie books and creator-owned stuff, he will have a preview of other books in every issue. And that's going out to 70,000 readers every month. What better promotion can there be, really? Well, normally this is where we would do ads. But Joe twisted my arm and put the ads at the beginning. So,
and you,
Joe, what's
still failed?
What did I fail?
Well,
at
usually
now?
You task me about eBay right after the ads. I thought I'd get
that's
that.
That's what I was about
I thought
to
we'd
do.
Get that done early, and then we could have gone on to a nice discussion. But no, Strode has failed us for the last. Well, not the last time. There's always next podcast.
Well, maybe we should just name the show Corey's Failures. How would that be? Would
isn't that,
be
isn't that your
that?
Solo podcast?
Ooh, nice.
Snap. I suppose nice. I should be nice. I haven't even asked him about mine yet, but hopefully.
You know, I could cut out everything about eBay.
You usually do.
No, I don't. I only edit things that would embarrass everybody else. The stuff that embarrasses me, I leave in because I don't know. I'm an idiot. Joe, what's going on eBay, you lousy son of a... Why I didn't...
Well, see, the problem is now is because we're finally into the podcast is that the computer's frozen up, so I can't get to my eBay anymore, which is why I wanted to do it earlier. Because now I got everybody upstairs home and everybody's jamming down my bandwidth.
Jen, you wanted a segment. Here's your segment while Joe's sighing.
I don't have anything. I mean, like, I had to think of something. I mean, I'm still trying to think of freaking and geeking, and I'm really sleepy. That's all I can think about right now. I didn't get any sleep. I talked about comics. Come on.
I swear to God.
I talked about comics. Like, in everything. Like, I even recommended some. What more do you want from me?
Well, it's time for Freaking and Geeking since nothing else is working.
Yeah.
Joe, what are you freaking on?
Well, that's what I'm freaking on. My fucking computer's not working. I got all these goddamn windows open, and I can't get to a single fucking one because the computer's just... You know, chewing up bandwidth.
And you have too many damn windows
open.
Listen
to Joe dropping F-bombs. He thinks he's me.
I know. It's just crazy, ain't it? Oh, now yeah. I finally got the eBay windows going.
Well, tell us about the eBay.
Actually, I was going to just mention a couple of the different things because, you know, one thing that this here podcast seems to be gravitating towards is all the newer stuff that's coming out. And by God, there's tons of it. But
oh, dear. Yeah.
Well, this week in eBay, I went really, really deep into the vault, and I found some stuff. For example, I found from 1947, Catholic Comics. In an alternative universe, Catholic Comics was actually published by EC during the 50s and featured Graham Ingalls and Jack Davis classics like Oh, That Inquisition and The Martyrdom of St. Valentine with its infamous bleeding hardcover.
Oh, dear God, I would have bought
it. Alas, in our reality, it was published, strangely enough, by Catholic publications and featured wholesome fare such as Bill Brown of Notre Dame, Fighting Father O'Malley, and Betty and Bob, Young Explorers, interspersed with uplifting features like The Gospel Page. I found this kind of interesting because we talked last week. There was one of the guys who gave us a couple of review comics of more religious-themed stuff. And, you know, it's nothing new in comics. I mean... I mention this because I had a copy of Catholic Comics number 1, volume 12, and it was in very good shape. Anytime you go dealing with old comics like that, I don't have the money to grade everything, you know, go to CGC and have it slabbed and numbered. So I have to sit down with the comic book Overstreet's comic book guy, and he has a great section where he talks all about conditioning a comic, so I'm going through and I'm looking at it. So I find it in very good. I put it up. It sold instantly. I mean, I didn't even get it. It couldn't have been on more than 10 seconds and somebody bought it. And the guy sent me an email asking if I had any more because they just don't show up that often, much less on eBay. Another one that was interesting, and I found this one called Topics. This was done from 42 to 52 by the, I can't even say it, Catechol Guild, I think, I don't know. But it was in St. Paul. So this was published in St. Paul for 10 years. Again, another religious type comic directed at children, particularly those in Catholic schools. And it featured a combination of inspirational fables, profiles of saints and church notables. I haven't seen a lot of these around, and I have two, one on eBay, one sold right away. And what was interesting is that both these comics I inherited when I bought Hot Comics in 91. Or was it 92? I forget. And they just sat because whatever they were doing, nobody cared. I mean, I didn't discount them. They weren't in that great a shape. I think I only graded them as a good. But I put them up on eBay and bam, they sold right away. The one I had was Volume 7, Number 3 from 1948. Corey, have you ever heard of Wilbur?
Yes, it was one of the Archie ripoffs. By the way, Catholic Comics, I want to mention a few of the artists who worked for them. One was Sid Green, who was ended up working over at DC during the 50s and 60s, did a lot of work for Julie Schwartz on Batman and the Elongated Man and Adam. He, along with Murphy Anderson, inked a lot of the stuff that in the Julie Schwartz books. But one of the major artists they had for covers and interior stories was EC artist Joe Orlando, who then went on to work over at DC, where he was the editor on the DC Mystery Comics in the 70s. Because remember, back in the 70s, under the Comics Code, you couldn't put out horror comics, you couldn't put out terror comics. So DC would put out Mystery Comics as their horror comics. Joe Orlando was also the editor of one of my favorite 70s DC books, Plop. So, little bit of art history there for you.
See, didn't I tell you it's scary, the stuff that deposits in Corey's head?
But, it is.
And, you know, the
it?
Thing is, you know, I said I sold it for $25. In mint shape, they're about $200, if you can even find these things. And apparently by talking to this guy on eBay, he just says they're just not around that much. So we talked about Wilbur, or we were talking about it. Wilbur.
It was an Archie knockoff.
Yep. And it actually ended up being owned by Archie. Actually, it was published by Archie. I had a number two, again, another book from 1944 that just kind of hung around forever. And put it up, sold it right away. And let's see. Let's go for an obscure Marvel title. My Own Romance, published from 1949 into 1960. I had a number five, which had a really, really cool cover. If I can get my computer to cooperate here. It was a photo cover, and the one I was looking at was My Own Romance number five from 1949. Sure, sure, you can have these letters back for 10 grand. $10,000? I haven't got it, but I'll get it somehow. Please, Betty, my wife must never know. And of course, behind is the wife. Oh, Frank.
Tons and tons and tons of Vince Coletta art in this.
Oh yeah. And this one, again, I all these good books were anywhere from good to very good. You know, I look at them and you just wish they were in nicer shape.
No, you don't, because it's Vince Coletta artwork.
Yeah, it's still. I mean, when you're telling stuff for $25, I could go upwards for $150, you know. Yeah.
Okay, all right, fine. But still, it's Vince Coletta artwork.
Corey, do you know who Zen the Intergalactic Ninja is?
Yes, it is a comic that they tried desperately for years to license as a TV show, as a cartoon, and as a toy, and no one ever gave a shit.
Well, Archie did pick it up.
And it's the dumbest name I've heard.
Archie did pick it up for a while in 1992. They did Zen the Intergalactic Ninja. Unfortunately, I only did three issues, and they're very, very cheap.
And they're very, very terrible.
I sold was a copy, a variant copy that was attached to the Just Toys Zen action figure. So that particular comic was specifically made just for that collector pack, and
I can't help but think there's a lot more comics like that that were only available as part of the toy. I remember our good buddy Jerome Wanker when he used to come into the store.
He's down to 22, by the way. The magic number's
22. 22 is all that's left, and he'll have one of every single DC comic ever published. And one of the ones that always baffled him were the toy ones, because it was always they had DC Direct had a special comic book in the back of every single one, and it was a unique cover. Or you went and you bought the Doomsday figure at Target, and it had a special copy of The Death of Superman in the back. So he knew that since I opened toys for my own warped purposes, that he would make an offer for any comic that was left over. So a lot of times I would funnel those into him. So I've got a lot of other ones listed, but we'll probably talk about those maybe next week if we feel the urge to go deeper into the vault than we normally do. And of course, remember Crazy, K-R-A-Y-Z on eBay. And if you ever do win something, just tell them you listen to this here podcast, and I will take something out of my vast accumulation of stuff. And both Corey and Jen have seen the storage area of some of the vast accumulation of stuff. I do have a lot of stuff accumulated, and I'm willing to give it to you.
Okay, now are we ready to do Freaking and Geeking?
Ask Jen. Jen, are you ready for Freaking and Geeking?
I want a nap.
Well, let's start with her. Jen, what are you freaking on?
I want a nap.
She wants a nap.
I'm so tired.
She's so cute when she's sleepy.
Can I go now? I talked about comics.
Well, give us a preview of what you're geeking on.
I don't have anything.
Okay.
I'm just tired.
Okay. Should we say goodbye to Jen?
May I go?
Well, it's that or we could start talking about, you know, Star Wars again.
Let's not drive her away again.
Oh, please. Joe, what did I do to you?
You insulted my Italian fries.
First you tried to kill me with pizza, and now...
No, that was Corey. He ordered that.
And, oh,
you should have seen two 12-inch pizzas he tried to stuff into this
poor girl. Stop it!
Next time I'll order for you, and it'll just be a small one like I had.
I'm not going back to that place.
You didn't like the pizza? Oh, no, you didn't think it was that good.
No.
That's fine. There's a lot of other pizza places we can try, too.
If I ate some pizza yesterday, and I think I don't like pizza anymore.
Oh, she's getting her tickle. Corey, what are you freaking on? What's got you down in the dumps?
Well, it's not what has me down in the dumps, but, well, there's one thing that has me down in the dumps. And one is... I had a phone interview for a job today, which that's not what is freaking me out, but I thought about it, and pretty much since the end of 2008, except for some brief periods, I have been looking for a job for years now, and every article I read talks about how, other than certain professions, such as nurses, doctors, home care aides, government jobs, except and low-end retail, low-end jobs, companies are moving inexorably toward a temp economy. The just-in-time method. It's, well, you know, we get a lot of business during this time, so we'll just hire enough people to get us through this horrible thing. And then once we're done, we'll get rid of them. So they're managing basically from crisis to crisis, and then they're wondering why the economy is sputtering and people have no loyalty to where they work. And I'm just so tired of telling people, yes, these are my good qualities. This is the one quality I need to improve on. Here's a story of when I changed something for the better. Here's a story where I had a plan and it didn't go as it was supposed to. And blah, blah, blah.
But you didn't mention every podcast, you know. That's pretty much every podcast I do never goes the way I'm planned.
Well, I've given up on that. I just throw up my hands and beat my head against the desk. But And, you know, what questions do you have for us? I have my list from different websites. Here are the five questions that will impress people the most when you ask. And every time I ask them, they go, wow, that's a really good question. And we have a thoughtful conversation. And there were two jobs I had in-person interviews for a month and a half ago. And I've emailed them to say, have you come to a decision yet? You know, where are we in the process? And both of them have emailed me within the last week to say, we're still in process. It's been a month and a half or 2 months. Please, the process must end at some point. I'm so, so sick of it. The second thing I am freaking on is, Joe, they announced a new Star Trek TV series today.
Yeah.
Did you see that?
Yeah.
And they've got the people who work on the show Fringe, which I loved, and they work on the movies, and CBS is really behind it, and only one episode will be on CBS. The rest you have to join up to CBS All Access in order to see, which is $5.99 a month to watch whatever was on CBS 5 days ago. Yet another streaming service. Now, there's a part of me that says, oh, I understand that. They want to push their streaming service, so they're going to have this thing that people want. But there's another part of me that says, you have just limited your audience unbelievably. Way to set yourself up for failure.
When that worked so well for the Paramount Network.
Netflix has their own TV series, but Netflix also has hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of movies and hundreds of TV series. So it's not like I'm going to pay $5.99 for one thing. It's no, I pay $9.99. And I have all this stuff to the point where I could just not watch cable anymore and just get Netflix. Hulu, starting to do the same thing. I see this more as what happened with Yahoo Screen, which is, hey, we're starting a streaming service, so we're going to have Community, which people want, and two other series. And they lost $42 million. Way to go, CBS. How about instead, you've got this roster of talent, you've got these movies that are pulling in more money than any Star Trek movies ever made. How about put it on your schedule? How about show it there? And then, you know, your CBS All Access or All Demand or whatever, you already own part of Hulu, okay? And then the last thing I am freaking on, Joe, I saw that, you know, you got, your box day hasn't shown yet.
No. Allegedly tomorrow.
Iron Man 1 and 2 are out. Spider-Man 1 and 2 are out. Guardians of the Galaxy number 1 is out. This is out. That's out. That's out. If you read Iron Man, you already know what happens to certain characters in Secret Wars. And Secret Wars probably is not going to be done until at least December, maybe even January. I no longer give a damn about how Secret Wars ends. Which sucks because I was really into Secret Wars. But now, because it's so late, they've had to, they haven't spoiled it, but they've spoiled it. It's no longer, oh my God, how is this going to end up? It's like, oh, we know the Marvel Universe comes back. We know there are other universes because there's already been Web Warriors, which has Spider-Man from different universes, hopping universe to deal with things, Marvel Contest of Champions, which also has characters being grabbed from different universes. So we know the multiverse comes back. Marvel, you've blown it.
Again.
You've blown it big time. And it depresses me because I could not have been more excited about Secret Wars, and now I just couldn't give less of a shit. Joe, what are you geeking on?
Well, you skipped my freaking.
I thought you freaked it. You said your computer was fucking up.
No, that was just leading into eBay.
What do you
think? I see how I was nice enough to give the lovely entire gin first crack at freaking.
And she left.
Yep. Well, as you can tell, my voice is going. That's what's freaking me, for one. I've got a freaking cold, and I'm tired of freaking colds. Last week, my wife had it to the point where she stayed home for 2 days, and she... I mean, it's like you almost have to be near death for her to stay home. So hopefully my voice will hang in there enough. This is the first year I don't have any Halloween candy to nosh on.
It was probably a good thing.
Maybe. It was funny, though, because the last year I came home from work and there was a big bowl sitting there. It said, "This is Dad's candy. Leave mine alone." Now, no, none for me. It's just not the same when you buy it.
There was half-price candy day,
not
though.
The same. If I can't steal it from my kids,
better.
I can't steal it from my kids. I don't want it, which is fine because I guess I'm not getting it.
Well, yeah.
The other thing that's freaking me out, you know the character Rogue, right?
Yes.
You know the character Leech, right?
Yes.
Why doesn't Gambit put Leech under the bed with maybe earplug and a Game Boy, so that her powers negate, so they can just get it on?
Because they eventually did get it on, and then they broke them up, and now no one cares.
I'm just saying. These plot points write themselves. That's all I got. Corey, what are you geeking on? What's got you simmering happily?
I have a stack here
Ooh.
Of the best box day ever.
Ooh.
First is the hardcover collection of Eerie, Volume 20, which collects Eerie 95 through 99. These are all edited by Louise Jones, who you may know as Louise Simonson. There's some amazing, amazing art. The stories really had taken a jump up at this point because Louise Jones was an incredible editor. And other than the fact that the Rook is taking over the book, the magazine, and I never found the Rook a very interesting character. He's a kind of a violent Doctor Who without any personality. It's just some great reprint stuff. And the reprints they do of the Eerie stuff is great because they also reprint the Warren ads, which were for things like, you know, hobby kits and buttons and 8mm films and et cetera, et cetera. So there's one hardcover. The next hardcover is Hot Guy Omnibus.
Omnibus.
Which, when I found out they were doing an omnibus, I quit reading the monthly comic, and that had to be, what, 2 years ago? Because
mm-hmm.
the damn thing is so late. So finally I will get to read the final story. But I, of course, immediately went to the comic, which may be my favorite single issue of a comic not done by Jack Kirby. And I'm going to highly recommend this to anyone who has ever wanted to read a comic book ever, 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 ever. And that is Hot Guy number 11, which is the Pizza Dog issue, where the entire issue is told from the perspective of the dog. And the art actually makes you understand how the dog thinks. This book is so good. I can't wait to read it. Then right underneath that, Grant Morrison's Multiversity, the deluxe edition, which also I didn't read because I knew that it would be coming out in a nice, big, beautiful hardcover. And not only does it have everything, including the issue that has, okay, here's all the Earths. What is it? The guidebook. But in the back, it has every variant cover. All of the all the variant covers, a bunch of the character sketches from the artists, as well as some pages that shows Morrison's script on the same page as the art, so you can see how the artist interpreted his script. It's, man, good stuff. The next book, Crime Does Not Pay, Volume 10, which reprints issues 58 to 61. Crime Does Not Pay is not a book that I would say, wow, this is a great book. But what people don't remember is this was the best-selling comic from like 47 to 52 or 53. It outsold Walt Disney's Comics and Stories. It outsold everything EC ever did. This was a comic that kids read, that adults read. This was like tabloid TV, except there wasn't TV. So it's all these stories about criminals and crime. And, you know, the cover of it is, no, Bugsy, please kill me first. Don't bury me alive. this is like pure exploitation stuff. And while I don't recommend it for everyone, if you're into the historics, if you're into the history of comics, there's a reason why Crime Comics took over and got everybody in so much trouble, and that is because this book sold better than everything. Some of the artists involved, George Tuska, Jack Cole. Jack Cole, Joe, what did Jack Cole draw?
Oh, Plaz. You will believe a man can Plaz.
Yep, Plastic Man. George Tuska, what did George Tuska draw?
I'm drawing a blank.
He drew tons of Marvel books, including The Champions and Iron Man in the 70s. Dan Barry, who went on to draw Flash Gordon. So lots and lots of good stuff. And then the last omnibus, the one that I could use to stun a small animal.
And that you'll probably be using to prop up your roof when it starts snowing.
Nope, because I'm not paying $125 to prop up my roof, although I got it at half price. Werewolf by Night.
Yeah, I saw that one.
This son of a bitch is 1,160 pages. It is all 43 issues of the comic. Is it 43 or 42? I can never remember.
I'd have to look it up.
I'm looking.
He's looking, folks.
It is 43. Plus all of the giant size, plus all of the crossovers. It's got it all. I was amazed at how much of this book was drawn by either Gil Kane, Tom Sutton, or Don Perlin. The writers changed until Doug Mensch got on the book, and then he just stayed with it till the end. But the art is really consistent. And some of this Gil Kane stuff is just... You could tell that he was happy to draw it because it wasn't superheroes. But also, the Don Perlin stuff looks a lot like Gil Kane. So there was probably a lot of it where they moved, was influenced by Gil Kane. There's some Mike Plugart. This is the kind of stuff that Marvel was doing in the 70s. Werewolf by Night was never a book that sold through the roof, but it was a consistent seller. It was always interesting. And now I've got the whole goddamn thing in one big hardcover.
He's got the whole damn thing in one hardcover.
And what I really wanted to kind of highlight was this box day kind of showed my interests in one box. You know, there was previews, there was Knights of the Dinner Table, there was other stuff. But when it comes to the stuff that I got really excited about, there was old stuff from the 40s that feeds my love of the history. There's the stuff from the 70s that I didn't get to read with a lot of really good art and a lot of European art. So I'm expanding my horizons. There's the 70s Marvel Cheese. There's Grant Morrisoning all over the place, and then Hawkeye, which may be my favorite modern comic, period. So, best box day ever. Joe, what are you geeking on?
Well, we talked a bit about the Supergirl TV show. I enjoyed it more than I thought. I mean, there were a lot of holes, but, you know, part of me is like, you know what? They're not necessarily aiming at a guy like me who's been collecting comics since God knows when. I enjoyed it. I've got it set up. I'll probably go watch it once we're done doing our stuff here. Comics Red. Just want to cover a few. You talked a bit last week about Amazing Spider-Man Zero. I read that, and I picked up Avengers Zero. I haven't got my box day, but what I usually do is I run past the source and then I'll pick up a variant cover or two, so at least I can read it. I got to say, I agree with you on Amazing Spider-Man, especially the reveal at the end. I did not like it as much as I liked Avengers. Both books were extra padded. They showing off there's going to be a Spider-Man family of books. There's going to be Avengers family of books. I hope there's an X-Men Zero somewhere because, man, those X-Men titles really got me lost. But I liked the Avengers one because it kind of flowed real smooth as an actual story. I didn't feel like I was being fed
a bunch of previews for the next issue. And I kind of appreciated that they went the extra mile to do that. Amazing Spider-Man was fun. I did like the first story. The rest of it, I don't think there was enough to get me interested to want to read, even though they tried their best to hook me. It just didn't work for me. So, but like I said, I will continue with Amazing Spider-Man. I read, I picked up the action figure variant of Spider-Gwen, which I don't know. I'm not feeling the book. You know what I'm saying? It's just not doing what I hoped it would do. I've enjoyed her crossovers when she's with the whole League of Superfluous Spider-Men, but I just, the solo stuff just isn't doing it for me. I also picked up the Thing variant, action figure variant of the Guardians of the Galaxy #1, and I'm enjoying this again. There's been some changes, obviously. I don't know what's been going on, but Brian Michael Bendis is writing it. As long as he's writing it, I'm going to enjoy it. And I'm wondering if, because they're not doing an FF comic, he just said, you know what, give me that there Thing, and I'll do something fun with him.
I like the opening where the Thing said, this is what I've always wanted.
Yep.
And it does, for all the people who shit on Bendis saying, he doesn't know continuity, he screws it up, blah, blah, blah. Ben Grimm was a pilot, and until it was one of those things that they would touch on from time to time. And when people go back to the beginning, when they say we're going to get back to basics, they talk about how they're explorers. Ben Grimm was from that era of the right stuff. And he's done best when he's a New York tough guy who has the personality of a test pilot. So I'm really happy about that. I'm kind of wondering what they're going to do with the Fantastic Four all broken up and in all other books. But like you said, the first issue was just so fun that it does what a first issue does. I felt like I got a whole story, but there was a lot of, oh crap, what now?
Yeah. These are a couple books I'm going to talk about. I had them set up for our review episode, but they ended up going a little too long. A while back, I picked up May. It's a graphic novel by Gene Ha. It was done through a Kickstarter. And it's the story that Gene has been waiting to tell. It's portal fiction, which, portal fiction is the device where the portal, the person either goes through it, like Lion's Witch in the Wardrobe, Wizard of Oz, or something comes through like Ghostbusters and they got to deal with it in our reality. With May, let's see, I'll just read the little back blurb here. It says, when her long lost sister returns, May Fortell gets pulled into her world of wonders and pearl. Her sister disappeared without a trace 8 years ago. May was left to care for her ailing father. She went to school, continued on her life. But then there was a fateful day that Abby returned. She revealed fantastic tales filled with adventure. Stories are pretty hard to believe, May thought, until the monsters started showing up. Impeccably drawn, I mean, Gene Ha, it was laid out very well. And the only freaking I have on it is that it's chapter one. I believe he said it's being picked up as a Dark Horse series. So being that this was a successful one, now he'll be going forward with the rest of it. And, of course, I've got my name in the Hall of Heroes, the Kickstarter backers. So that's kind of a ego boost. If you do get a chance to see Gene Ha anywhere, definitely pick this one up from him direct. Or I hope, like he said, it will be a Dark Horse. I have a bit of a conundrum going with all the Image titles. Because, like I said before, there were just so many coming out. They all sounded so good. And I was getting to the point where I would buy them and never read them. So if something gave and I finally just called it quits, knowing that what would happen, I would eventually read them and then have to rush to the shop to pick up the rest of them. Two titles came to mind. The first one is Savior by Todd McFarlane. Never heard of that guy. Brian Holgan and Clayton Cran. Guy shows up during an air disaster, naked, out of a cornfield, holding a survivor.
He's haunted. He's hailed as a savior. The problem is he has no idea who he is, how he got there, or what's going on. It's a interesting take on this story. Well, one thing I absolutely loved was that, you know, the authorities aren't all, you have to stay here. They're like, well, you know, you don't have your memories. Just, you know, if you're around, hang around, no big deal, you know. I had three issues. They're up to issue 7, I believe. So I went and picked up the other ones. And the second book that this happened, where I had the first 6, and fortunately, I think they're only up to issue 6 now. Secret Identities. Let's see. Brian Jones, Jay Faber, Elias Kralzitz. This is a superhero group book. And you know, my biggest complaint about these is that you're thrown in the middle of the action. You don't know who these people are, what's going on, and you have to figure it out. Well, that happens in Secret Identity, but it plays out really well, because once you figure out the villains don't matter, it's the heroes that matter. And the thing with Secret Identity is somebody in there is going to be a mole and a traitor. You find out who the first issue, so you're not, it's not a big mystery, but now you've got to watch and you see as the other heroes, as they go through and they either trust or they don't trust this guy, or they bring him in and they don't bring him in. And they all seem to have their own secrets as well. The one character, I'm going to pause here while I try to figure out where this character is. All right, I'll just say he's a, I think his name is Venetius, if I'm right. Let me just blah, 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 blah. He is a big, hulking, flaming rock man. He believes he was from when the volcano erupted and he was buried by Venetius. But when he goes to an archaeologist who has papers from that era saying, here's a bunch of names of some of the families that we think died, he kind of looks down at him. And suddenly these valuable parchments come up in flame. And, oh, no. And he's like, oh, I'm so sorry. I apologize. The question is, did he do it on purpose or not? So there's a lot of little mysteries within the other mysteries within, you know, who... Well, we know who the traitor is. We just don't know why he's doing what he's doing. So I really enjoyed it. And for a group book, they finally got it right. A lot of these books I ended up picking up at Hot Comics New Hope. They're actually moving to a new location, which is approximately 100 feet down from their old location. So they're doing like I did at one time, doing a vertical move. They were doing things dirt cheap, not really, but they had 30% off back issues. So I sprung and picked up a few. One of them, I'm not sure if I ever read before, Fortune and Glory by Brian Michael Bendis, a true Hollywood comic book story.
I love that book so much.
I am pretty sure I read this because I remember having this just at cover price on the shelf all the time. And, again, I don't know if I have it, so I picked it up. I found a Spanish version of Savage Dragon, which I thought was kind of funny. So I picked that up because I do like me comics that different language and stuff. Picked up some other really strange things. A one-shot from Image, Self-Obsessed by Cena Grace. I'll read about that later. Goofy... One from Fawcett way back in the Golden Age. Nayoka, the jungle girl.
Ah, yes.
But she's not in any type of jungle outfit. She's just helping a young lad cook something over a fire. So I'll read that one later. 13 going on 18. Looks like a comic funny book. It's a Dell one. It just looks goofy. And then I picked up some rare ones, which I'm sure we could probably talk about later. We talked earlier about the 1940s Marvel romance. Got me some 1970s Marvel romance.
Ooh.
Our Love Story, number 17, 19. My Love, number 15. And
most of those were reprints.
Yep, Our Love Story, 29. I know they were reprints, and they're probably reprinting of the ones like I just sold.
Yeah. But
I got to tell you, for the life of me, never, ever saw them. I mean, I would go, again, I shot the Ketter Shop, St. Paul Comic. I went to all the Shinders I could. I never recall seeing any of these on the shelf. And I wonder if it was just that nobody ever ordered them.
Now, I remember them as a kid because a lot of, they would show up at yard sales. I don't know if they had this when you were a kid, but it would be, here's a stack of comics. They were 10 cents each or three for a quarter. And people would, you know, basically just take their kids' comics, slap them there.
Yeah.
And I was able to get a lot of Marvel stuff. But the thing about Marvel's romance stuff from the 70s, it was a lot like when they got into horror in the 70s and other genres other than superheroes. The only two that remained all new were the superheroes, although yeah, they reprinted stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And the I like to call them the superhero monsters, like Dracula, Frankenstein, Werewolf by Night, which I have right here. But with the horror anthology books and the romance books, they would have new stories in the first few issues. But the sales came back as not very good, but good enough that they could sell them. And this was also during the time when Marvel no longer had a restriction on how many books they came out with. So they went back to what they had done in the 40s and 50s, which is flood the market. Oh, somebody's putting out romance books? We're putting out 20 of them. Somebody's putting out horror books? We're going to put out 30 of them. And they would have new stories in the first few of the romance books, including a really amazing Jim Sternanko story. I think it's Our Love Stories 2. It's number 2 of one of them.
What's really interesting here is I've got Our Love Story number 17 and Our Love Story number 29. The first one says it's all new, all true to life. What would you have done if you were Tracy Scott when love is lost? The second one says tales of romance from the pages of real man life. What would you have done if you were Tracy Scott? Also, when love is lost. It's the exact same cover art.
Now, you've got the book there, right?
A little different. I mean, one the pillow is pink, the other is green, the other one the girl's dresses are green, and the other one the girl's dresses are pink.
Now, Joe, open up those books.
All right.
Just one of them, but open one of them up.
I'll just do the easy one. Hang on. Gotta be careful. The bane of all comic is the tape on the bag, because it just seems to be drawn right onto the comic. Okay, I got her open. This is number 17.
Open it up, because it's a newer Marvel. They probably will have the credits in there.
Negative.
They don't have any credits for who did the stories?
Nope. They just... Oh, wait. Yes. As Stoltz... There it is. It's cleverly hitting on a rock in the scene.
Yeah.
As told to Stan Lee, illustrated by Ross Andrew and Jack Abel.
Okay, so Ross Andrew, if Stan wrote it, it can't be new unless it's from the 60s. Yeah. If it's from the 60s, this was when Ross Andrew was still over at DC doing Wonder Woman and doing tryouts at Marvel. Because remember, he also did that one Spider-Man story that got printed in Marvel Superheroes as Stan was trying to get Ross Andrew to come over, but to draw Marvel style.
Okay, here the second story is as told to Gary Frederick, illustrated by Jack Katz and Frank Gioscia.
Yep, Gioscia was an inker at Marvel. Katz is the guy who later went on to do First Kingdom. But he actually drew comics in the 40s. So you'll see a lot of the artists they used in these books were guys who either had been around for a long time and didn't do the superhero stuff, or they were people kind of doing tryout books. You know, okay, will you work at Marvel? Will this work? So that they could keep the budget low.
Now, what's interesting here is the latest issue
you know, maybe, I don't know, maybe it was new. Because I'm in Love Story 29, where they have the exact same story, but it says, originally presented in Our Love 17.
Yep.
So even as they got to the end, I wonder if this backup story is the same. Nope, backup story is something different. Don't Ask Me to Marry You. Originally presented in Our Love 10, which I have. No, I don't have. I didn't pick up that one.
But one of the things about the romance books over at Marvel was eventually they just turned them over to the Vince Coletta studio,
mm-hmm.
because Vince would work cheap, which is, and I've talked a lot in the past how, you know, Vince Coletta, the Great Eraser, blah, blah, blah. One of the things was he didn't get paid a lot for his pages, so he would actually time out. If I want to make this much per hour, I could spend this much per page. That's how little he gave a shit about what he was inking. I don't care what people say, because I've heard the argument that, oh, no, no, he would try different styles and this and that. If you look at his Thor comic, all the women had the same face. Most of the men, unless they had facial hair, had the same face. And if you've looked at Kirby's original art, no one has the same face.
Let's see.
He knew how to, okay, here's how to draw a woman's lips. Boom, 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 done. Woman's eye. Boom, 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 done. He went through it for speed because he wouldn't get paid a lot. And the romance books, he would have these kids who wanted to get into comics. You know, they're 17, 18, 19, 20 years old in New York. He'd bring them into his studio and pretty much set them up on an hourly rate. And if they didn't put out a number of pages that he expected, you're out, next one's in. And he became the guy that they would go to for romance books because while none of them would look great, none of them would look utterly shitty either. I could go on and on about how much I hate Vince Coletta's art. Could go on and on about it. But yeah, one of the things I like about Marvel is the sort of the weird stuff they tried in the 70s because they were bold.
And I just love the covers. And, you know, I think one of the last cons I went to, I picked up a horror book just because it was so gorgeously colored, even though it's just reprinting stuff.
And they were told, we want this many books. To the point where they went to Ross Andrew and Mike Esposito and said, hey, you know that book Get Lost you did in the 50s? Do you think we could reprint that so that we could get, you know, another book out? And they said, sure. And it was a book where if you pick it up, I think it's called ARG. I'm not sure. But all the stories are copyright. All the stories are copyright, Ross Andrew and Mike Esposito, because Marvel just licensed them to get more shit on the shelf. See, look at all this interesting comics history that would have put Jin to sleep without her leaving the podcast. For the love of God.
The only other thing I was geeking on is I finally got two of the new Teen Titans comics or graphic novels that I was missing. I was able to pick up number one where they're reprinting all the George Perez, Marv Wolfman stuff. And I just ordered volume four, but Volume 2 and 3 were just out of stock everywhere. Even on discount comic book service, they didn't have them. So I went to the old eBay, hooked up with a store I visited when I was out in Vegas, Cosmic Comics, and got me my Volume 2, Volume 3. So I have something to read while I wait for my box day to show up tomorrow. So I got that going for me. Which is
nice. Well, believe it or not, kids, you've listened to us blather on about comic books for almost 2 hours.
Yeah. And really about comics, too, with not too many detours.
Well, that's one of the things that we're cooking. We're cooking with gas here, kids.
Oh, I know. It's that bad beans I had. Oof.
So, as we say every week, the comic we like the least, we still like better than the comic that you like the most. Joe?
Well, do you want to hit my music, or do you want a quote?
Oh, for the love of God.
Well, with Jin not here, no one can hit the music, so I figured...
You've been doing it for 200 episodes!
Okay. America is woven by many strands. I would recognize them and let it so remain. Our fate is to become one and yet many. This is not a prophecy, but a description. Ralph Ellison. He's a novelist, in case you didn't know that. Corey, hit my music. Buck is on a roll.